Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Good day, and welcome to iStar Financial's first quarter 2014 earnings conference call. If you need assistance during today's call, please press star zero. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded. At this time, for opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Jason Fooks, Vice President of Investor Relations and Marketing. Please go ahead.
Thank you, John, and good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us today to review iStar Financial's first quarter 2014 earnings report. With me today are Jay Sugarman, Chairman and Chief Executive Officer, and David Dastasio, our Chief Financial Officer. This morning's call is being webcast on our website at istarfinancial.com in the investor relations section. There will be a replay of the call beginning at 12:30 P.M. Eastern Time today. Dial-in for the replay is 1-800-475-6701 with the confirmation code of 324797. Before I turn the call over to Jay, I'd like to remind everyone that statements in this earnings call which are not historical facts will be forward-looking. iStar Financial's actual results may differ materially from these forward-looking statements, and the risk factors that could cause these differences are detailed in our SEC reports. In addition, as stated more fully in our SEC reports, iStar disclaims any intent or obligation to update these forward-looking statements except as expressly required by law. Now I'd like to turn the call over to iStar's Chairman and CEO, Jay Sugarman. Jay?
Thanks, Jason, and thank you for joining us this morning. Our first quarter results continue the trend of improving performance as we invest idle cash, lower our interest costs, and push in our commercial operating and land portfolios to begin contributing to the bottom line. Investment activity has continued to build with over $200 million in fundings in the quarter, and more importantly, a growing pipeline of opportunities in process and under LOI. While markets are competitive, we continue to work our existing portfolio for opportunities, and we're looking for ways to capture off-market transactions. We expect to see some of those efforts show up in the coming quarters. Let me do a brief overview of our various business lines. In real estate finance, segment profit was $9.3 million versus $10.8 million last quarter. We noted an increase in yield within the portfolio to 8.6% from 8% in the fourth quarter due to higher yielding originations funded as well as payoffs of lower yielding loans, while prepayment fees ended a little bit lower. With a lot of cash sitting on the balance sheet, we're getting involved in more transactions, which should lead to increased investment activity and future revenue growth. In net lease, we closed our JV with the Sovereign Wealth Fund and contributed the first asset purchase for the fund. Our team is looking for assets we have a particular view on and continue to be disciplined in evaluating new situations. Financial metrics associated with our net lease portfolio remain strong, including segment profit of $11.3 million, up from $9.8 million last quarter, a consistent yield of  7.5%, and more than 11 years of weighted average remaining lease term. Profit in the operating portfolio improved from $5.5 million last quarter to $11.3 million this quarter, due in part to an increase in condo gains. In addition, our stabilized commercial properties generated an 8.3% yield, while our transitional properties saw an increase in occupancy to 61% and an increase in yield to 3.1% due to some additional leasing activity. In our land portfolio, we continue to push on value-creating strategies. After many years of work, we reached successful entitlement milestones in Long Beach, New York, and in Los Angeles. We began significant development in Naples, Florida, signing an agreement with a national home builder covering approximately 25% of the lot. The income impact of these will take time to develop, and the portfolio is still generating a segment loss, $17.9 million this quarter versus $22.5 million last quarter, but it feels like we're making good progress on a number of fronts. And with that, let me turn it over to Dave now to review the numbers for the quarter in more detail. Dave?
Thanks, Jay, and good morning, everyone. Let me begin by discussing our financial results and capital markets activities for the first quarter before moving on to investments and the performance of our business segment. For the quarter, our adjusted income was a loss of $5.5 million or 7 cents per common share compared to a loss of $300,000 for the same quarter last year. The change in adjusted income was the result of a $19 million reduction in earnings from equity method investments, as the prior period included $15 million of income associated with our L&R investment, which we sold in the second quarter of 2013. last year's period also included $13 million more in real estate gains, primarily because we had higher levels of condominium inventory during that period. This was partially offset by a $15 million increase in our revenues as a result of additional operating lease income due to new leases and increased interest income due to current quarter investment activity. In addition, interest expense declined year over year by $14 million due to lower overall debt levels as well as lower cost of capital. Our net loss allocable to common shareholders for the quarter was a loss of $26.6 million, or 31 cents per diluted common share, compared to a loss of $41.3 million, or 49 cents per diluted common share for the same period last year. In addition to the reasons I mentioned before, the year-over-year decrease in net loss was also driven by a $14 million improvement in our loan loss provision and lower loss on early extinguishment of debt, as last year's period included the repricing of our 2013 secured credit facility. During the quarter, we repaid $46 million on our 2013 secured credit facility, reducing the remaining balance to $1.3 billion. This puts our collateral coverage at the end of the quarter at just over 1.375 times. When our coverage remains between 1.375 times and 1.5 times, we are able to retain 50% of the proceeds from principal repayments and sales of underlying collateral. This will slow our deleveraging and provide us with additional capital to reinvest. We also repaid $13 million on our 2012 secured credit facility, bringing the remaining balance to $418 million. Our weighted average effective cost of debt for the first quarter continued trending lower, down to 5.6% from 5.7% for the fourth quarter of 2013. Our leverage increased slightly to 2.1 times at the end of the quarter from 2 times at the end of the prior quarter, but still remains at the low end of our targeted range of 2 to 2.5 times. During the quarter, Fitch upgraded our credit rating while also revising our outlook to positive. We were pleased to see the rating agency recognize the significant progress we've made in extending our maturity profile, reducing our cost of capital, and improving the credit profile of the portfolio. Let me turn now to investment activity in our real estate and loan portfolios. We invested $229 million during the first quarter, including $181 million of new originations during the quarter. We generated $268 million of proceeds from our portfolio this quarter, which included $103 million from repayments and sales of loans in our real estate finance portfolio, $48 million from sales of operating properties, $76 million from sales of net lease assets, and $41 million in proceeds across other segments. We ended the quarter with $410 million of cash, which we expect to primarily use to fund future investment activity. At the end of the first quarter, our total portfolio had a carrying value of $5.2 billion, which represents the company's carrying value, gross of $433 million of accumulated depreciation and $31 million of general loan loss reserves. Let me discuss each of our four business segments. Our real estate finance portfolio increased from $1.4 billion to $1.5 billion at the end of the quarter as a result of the new loan originations we recently funded. The portfolio includes approximately $1.3 billion of performing loans, comprised of $660 million of first mortgages or senior loans and $645 million of mezzanine or subordinated debt. The performing loans generated a weighted average effective yield for the quarter of 8.6%, an improvement from the 8% we generated during the fourth quarter. At the end of the quarter, we had $203 million of NPLs, consistent with the prior quarter's level. We expect to resolve additional NPLs in the coming months, which could reduce this balance. For the quarter, we recorded a $3 million reversal of the loan loss provision, compared to a provision for loan losses of $10 million in the first quarter of 2013. Our total reserve for loan losses on March 31st was $370 million, comprised of $339 million of asset-specific reserves and $31 million of general reserves. Now let me provide a brief update on certain key metrics relating to our net lease portfolio. At the end of the quarter, we had $1.6 billion of net lease assets, gross of $343 million of accumulated depreciation. Our net lease portfolio totaled 20 million square feet across 33 states. This portfolio was 94% leased at the end of the quarter, with a weighted average remaining lease term of more than 11 years. For the quarter, our total net lease portfolio generated an unleveraged weighted average effective yield of 7.5%. As we announced on our last earnings call, we partnered with a sovereign wealth fund to form a vehicle that will jointly invest in net lease assets. The net lease venture's first investment is a property net leased to AT&T, which was acquired by the venture during the first quarter. Next, I'll turn to our operating properties portfolio. Our operating properties totaled $947 million, gross of $86 million of accumulated depreciation. The portfolio was comprised of $747 million of commercial and $200 million of residential real estate properties. The commercial properties represent a diverse pool of real estate assets across a broad range of geographies and property types, such as office, retail, and hotel properties. They generated $34 million of revenue, offset by $22 million of expenses during the quarter. At the end of the quarter, we had $132 million of stabilized commercial operating properties. These properties were 86% leased, resulting in an 8.3% unleveraged weighted average effective yield for the quarter. The remaining $615 million of commercial operating properties are transitional real estate properties that were 61% leased and generated a 3.1% unlevered weighted average effective yield. We are continuing to actively lease these properties in order to maximize their value. During the quarter, we executed commercial operating property leases covering approximately 184,000 square feet. The residential operating properties were comprised of 521 condominium units remaining in inventory at the end of the quarter. These units are generally located in projects characterized as luxury buildings in major cities throughout the United States. During the quarter, we sold 96 condos for $448 million in proceeds, resulting in $18 million of income, offset by $6 million of expenses. That brings me to our land portfolio. At the end of the quarter, our land portfolio totaled $973 million and included 11 master plan communities, 10 infill land parcels, and 6 waterfront land parcels. Master plan communities generally represent large-scale residential projects that we may entitle, plan, and develop. We currently have entitlements at these projects for more than 25,000 lots. Our infill and waterfront parcels are currently entitled for 6,000 residential units, and select properties include commercial, retail, and office space. The projects in the portfolio are well diversified in locations such as California, the New York metro area, Florida, and several markets in the Mid-Atlantic and Southwest regions. During the quarter, we invested $15.1 million in our land portfolio through capital expenditures. At the end of the quarter, we had 6 land projects in production, 10 in development, and 11 in the pre-development phase. We've continued to make headway on our land projects, as discussed in the earnings release, by obtaining entitlements, increasing horizontal construction, and developing site improvements. We have also continued to build relationships with home builders and other key partners in order to maximize the value of our projects. With our expectation that land will become a more meaningful contributor to our business, we began presenting revenues and costs associated with land sales on our income statement this quarter. We believe this presentation will allow investors to track the progress of our land efforts. This quarter, land sales revenues were $4.1 million and were associated with 2 projects where we are actively selling lots, Magnolia Green and Tether Row. Magnolia Green is a 3,550-lot master plan community in the suburbs of Richmond, Virginia. The community features resort-style amenities, including the Jack Nicklaus-designed Westham Golf Club. Tether Row is a 120-flyer-block master plan community near Bend, Oregon. The project is situated on the edge of the Willamette National Forest and features an 18-hole championship golf course. Costs associated with these land sales were $3.7 million for the quarter. We are working to position our land projects for increased contributions to earnings next year and look forward to updating you on our land development activities as well as additional projects moving to production in the coming quarters. With that, let me turn it back to Jay. Jay?
Thanks, Dave. So no big surprises this quarter, but we have some pretty good momentum heading into the middle of the year. And I think if a few things break our way, we should be able to continue to move toward overall profitability on an adjusted basis. We'll keep you updated as the year progresses. Operator, would you please open up the lines for questions?
Certainly. Ladies and gentlemen, today's question and answer session will be conducted electronically. To ask a question, please press star 1 at this time. We will take as many questions as time permits and proceed in the order that you signal us. Once again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to assemble the roster. And first in line of Mike Kim with the CRT Capital Group. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, guys, and a nice quarter. I guess my question is really kind of focused on the land side. You know, I guess the income statement, you're starting to break out land sales revenues and land cost of sales. You know, you mentioned Magnolia Green and Tethero. I was just wondering if we could get a little bit more granular detail just in terms of how many lots were sold in each and kind of the revenue per lot or the gross margin per lot between the two. And, you know, at a higher level, I guess just thinking about the progression of land sales over the next couple of years, if you could give us some guidance on, you know, sort of projects, when they might come online and start contributing to you know, the income statement. I know that you mentioned you know, the deal or the lot purchase agreement with Naples to you know, develop and deliver initial lots by early next year. But just wondering if you could help us think about, you know, how the progression of land sales will be. Will it be kind of a steady rise, lumpy in nature? You know, presumably some seasonality, but may not based on geographic mix. Just and also the progression of gross margins on land sales, if we can kind of you know, expect that to increase from, you know, the implied numbers from these two initial sales, or if that will kind of slowly grow over the next couple of years. Thanks.
Mike, sure. So let's talk about a little bit how we're thinking about our land and how's the best way to share information with you. You know, as Dave said, we're going to start breaking it out. We think it's time to do that. We do think over the next, you know, 12, 24 months, we've got enough projects coming online that you'll start to see some material metrics that we can share with you that are meaningful. I think in terms of Tethero and Magnolia Green, we're very early in both those projects, Magnolia being quite large, Tethero not quite so much. So, you know, the one thing we've always hesitated to is that people kind of divide total lots by sales in a quarter and tell us, you know, how many years of supply we have.
Right.
Because we are still early in the game on both of those. But in this quarter, I think we were just under 40 lots between them, called Magnolia 30-ish and Cascade 10. Not really meaningful metrics yet,
uh-huh.
Both in terms of the cost we're having to spend up front to accelerate those sales, but also just in terms of the overall magnitude of the portfolio. But there's really nothing to be gotten from those two statistics yet.
Okay.
And I think as we go through the year and as we bring you know, more of the master plan communities and some of the urban stuff online, then I think you're going to start seeing us disclose, you know, details that we think are representative of those projects.
Okay.
But I would tell you it's still a little early to do that. So, you know, we'll probably come up with a formal way to share those going forward, but it's probably premature to do that.
Okay. And is your expectation that those metrics will be similar to, I guess, like the public home builders or land developers?
Yeah, we're going to try to give you stuff that, you know, is representative and meaningful, and you know, I don't think we're going to vary too differently from what we've seen others who have, you know, projects that are, you know, fully ramped midstream. Then you can start seeing a steady state. Okay, now I see where this is going.
Uh-huh.
for something like Magnolia, where we're talking about, you know, 30 lots in a 3,000 lot development, where we're just kicking off some big initiatives,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's probably not a relevant metric yet.
Gotcha. Okay. No, I appreciate that.
And on the when, in terms of other projects coming online, again, we've been, you know, somewhat circumspect just because, you know, the land business has taught us to be patient and thoughtful before we, you know, start to project things. We do feel like, you know, as we said before, 14, you know, a lot of milestones crossed throughout this year, and 15 really the year where we start to see, you know, real fundamental progress in terms of sales and certainly potentially profitability begin.
Mm-hmm.
That's the game plan right now. I think in terms of getting stuff online, it's easier for us to project something like Naples, where we're in the ground and we're, you know, we've moved 2 million cubic feet of dirt, and we can kind of see the story from here to there. I think some of the other ones where we're still, you know, battening down the last pieces of a entitlement process or a political process,
mm-hmm.
much more difficult to give you, you know, a quarterly projection. We certainly think 2015 is the, you know, yearly projection, and we're not yet ready to narrow that down to the quarters where we're going to bring stuff online.
I see. And I guess from your perspective, as you sit here today, I mean, you know, for 2015, I guess how many projects do you expect to be open, you know, away from stuff that's still being negotiated or kind of worked through, but, you know, as it stands today in terms of certainty and, you know, lot purchase agreements and whatnot, how many active projects do you expect, you know, for 2015, would you say?
Well, Dave's got a great schedule on that. You know, right now the projection is 11 things online. Some of those are vertical, some of those are single family. You know, that's probably a good number to think about. Some of those are relatively big and quite interesting.
Uh-huh.
From a P&L perspective, some of them, as we've said in the past, we're just grinding through to get our money back with a, you know, small return on it. So
sure.
I think you'll see us highlight the ones where we think there are material P&L possibilities.
Yeah.
And as we get better metrics around those, you will see us, you know, give you some guideposts so you can kind of see where we think they're headed, with always the caveat that, you know, in this business we've learned, you know, it's a slower moving business and things are not always as predictable as some of our other businesses, but feel pretty confident throughout 14 we will continue to highlight progress in individual projects, put them on your radar, and then hopefully in 15 you'll start to see some P&L impact.
Excellent. All right, great. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, just a quick reminder, if you do have a question, please press star 1, and we'll go to the line of Jade Rahmani with KBW. Please go ahead.
Good morning, and thanks for taking the questions. Can you discuss the investment pipeline and what you're seeing in terms of opportunities and competition? Any color on yields, LTVs, or deal types would be helpful.
Jade, thanks. I think I've said in the past, I mean, we fundamentally believe, particularly in a market like this where there's a lot of competition for yield, that we need to play to our historical strength, which is looking for crossover markets. You know, there's a real estate component, there's a corporate credit component, there's a capital markets component, there's a capital structure, the complexity. Those are the places we're finding the most interesting opportunities, particularly within existing relationships or existing deals. We're redoubling our efforts to kind of dig underneath the covers and go, what can we do here that would be a better risk-reward than what we see in the broader markets? You know, the big theme is still, you know, we think the banks have kind of found their you know, comfort zone. They've left a big piece of the capital structure out there for folks like ourselves and others to fill. And everybody's sort of jockeying to figure out how to fill it. Some cases, that's take the whole thing down, as we did in Times Square. In some cases, it's going to be taking just the mezzanine or B-note or something in the, I'm going to call it the 60 to 75, maybe 80% zone. That piece of paper is still bouncing around. If it's, you know, nice and simple and can be bid out, it's pretty tight out there. We're not doing any of those. But the person who puts it together, the person who figures out how to solve the complexities, the person who's there early and comes up with a way to make it a, you know, strong deal from a capital structure standpoint, gets to charge the premium. And, you know, we're thinking the air is a lot thinner there. There's probably two or three other people who we see regularly. We're all getting pretty much our fair share. And that market segment's still quite interesting to us. So at least on the finance side, you know, there's a big chunk of the market that we think we can play in and play in effectively. It's going to be, you know, for us at least currently, it's going to be in the high single digits. Probably typically going to be on a floating rate basis. On the mezz stuff, it can be, you know, low teens kind of situations. And, you know, if you're going above 80 or 85%, you're certainly looking for some sort of special either kicker or call protection or something that gives you good convexity. And that's really not different than anything we've seen, you know, over 20 years. It's a little more competitive, I would say, for things that are, you know, clean and simple and easy and 10 people can bid on them. But those situations where it's not quite so clean and simple and easy, where somebody has to dig in and actually figure it out and bring a lot of skill sets to bear, we still have game there. So that's where we're focused, and that's where we think we're winning the best deals.
And can you say a little bit more about what would characterize those deals where there's only, you know, two or three others, you know, looking at that and that can solve for it? Is it acquisition financing? Is it, you know, just the development involved or, you know, the lack of stabilization on the underlying asset? Is it property type? Is it size? What is it, do you think?
Yeah, I think you hit on a lot of them. I mean, certainly in transitional where you're underwriting a business plan, you know, you're going to have to dig in and do a lot of deep dive work to get comfortable with that. That's been interesting. Large capital structures, we've talked about, you know, size is still a limiter, keeps the composition down. So larger deals in situations where there's lots of moving pieces that can be in a corporate situation or it can be in a, you know, a borrower who doesn't know exactly how much they need or when they need it, but they know they're going to do the deal. That little bit of uncertainty, you'd be surprised, you know, makes it very hard for the typical intermediary to get their hands around what am I asking for? What am I telling people they have to show up? How fast do people have to move? Typically, that's a situation we can be very helpful either to the borrower directly or to the intermediary and say, don't worry about it. Tell us the business proposition. Tell us what you're trying to achieve. Tell us why the equity is going to be successful here. And we'll figure out the rest of the capital structure, whether it's senior or junior or combined. You know, we're really good at that. That's our, you know, $35, $40 billion of track record comes into play. But in terms of product type, in terms of very specific things, you know, it's a time to be pretty opportunistic. We have seen some good development deals. We have seen good transitional stuff. We have seen very good stabilized stuff in a large portfolio corporate context. So I can't give you the one theme or the two themes because there aren't any right now, but it's a big market. There are holes in it right now. There's a couple clever folks trying to fill them who have the capital capacity like we do. And right now it's a pretty good market. It's not, you know, great. There is, you know, competition, but there's plenty of room for, you know, four or five people we see regularly.
And just on the increased competition, which we've definitely been hearing a lot about, I mean, do you view it as a normalization in the market, you know, entrants or participants that haven't been as active over the last couple of years, you know, feeling confident enough in real estate where we are in the economic cycle to make loans, or are there things in underwriting, you know, that are a cause for concern to you?
I think it's much more the former, but I wouldn't say it's that they're more comfortable. It's that in a world star for yield, you know, some of the largest investment complexes have all decided, you know, they needed to have exposure to this sector, have committed resources and talent, and, you know, are doing what we have, you know, been doing for 20 years. We saw that opportunity in 1992 and have been playing it ever since, you can create very good risk-adjusted returns in a hard asset class like this with knowledge and expertise and you know, the right capital structures. And I think other people are, you know, are gravitating to that, you know, same combination. But I think the banks pulling back and really finding a comfort zone has opened up the space so it can accommodate more folks like that. And, you know, we certainly think we're one of the biggest and most experienced, so we'll get our fair share.
Okay, thanks. Just a couple of quick ones. First, can you just give color around what drove the impairment charge? And then secondly, when do you think it's realistic to forecast a return to profitability? Is that something that happens, you know, by the fourth quarter, or is that really in 2015? Thanks a lot.
Sure. The impairment was a small property in Silicon Valley. We got into a situation where to get a tenant in, you know, we had to give them a purchase option at the bottom of the market. We didn't think they'd hit it. They turned out to be quite successful, so they purchased the asset at a price that cost us, you know, on a book basis. It was a low-yielding asset, so, you know, frankly, we'll take those proceeds and reinvest them at a higher rate, but that's where it came from.
Okay, and on the return to profitability?
You know, that's the $64,000 question. As I said, on an adjusted basis, we kind of targeted 15 as the year we're going to, you know, make that turn. There are things in the hopper that could accelerate that, but I think realistically from now, I'd still point you to 15.
Great. Thanks a lot. Appreciate all the color.
And Mr. Fuchs, we have no further questions in queue.
Great. Thanks, John. And thanks to everyone for joining us this morning. If you should have any additional questions on today's earnings release, please feel free to contact me directly. John, would you please give the conference call replay instructions once again? Thanks.
Certainly. And, yeah, ladies and gentlemen, this conference will be available for replay. It starts today at 12:30 p.m. Eastern. Will last until May 13th at midnight. You may access the replay at any time by dialing 800-475-6701 and entering the access code 324797. That does conclude your conference for today. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.